SEC fans, this is John Crisp from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS podcast, coming to you from the iHeartMedia studio, WDAE in Tampa, Florida, 620 AM and 95.3 FM. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode is former Kentucky quarterback Andre Woodson. He's the Wildcats' all-time leader with 79 touchdown passes. Yes, more than Jared Lorenzen. Yes, more than Tim Couch. You can follow him on Twitter at Andre Woodson Jr. Andre, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. The Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you by Ticket City. College football is in full swing. There are some sensational matchups in the SEC for Week 5. Georgia at Tennessee, Mississippi State at Auburn, Ole Miss at Alabama. Now's the time to get your tickets. We've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in the field, having served over 1.5 million customers. They're the place to go for tickets and have been for 30 years. Best of all, they're going to give some love to our Saturday Down South podcast listeners. All you need to do, go to TicketCity.com and enter the discount code SDS20, and you're going to get $20 off the game of your choice. Again, that's TicketCity.com, discount code SDS20. Get off the couch, get to the stadium, get your tickets today for SEC football. And now, Andre Woodson. Andre, I know you agreed to come on the show before the weekend, and you were hoping to talk about the big win for Kentucky, first one in three decades over Florida. It didn't quite go that way. It just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing to see the outcome of the game, but certainly I think a lot of Kentucky fans are very optimistic about what they viewed. I think the perspective of the fact that we now have tremendous talent, there's a lot of playmakers. I think the future is certainly bright. Hopefully we can just continue to develop those athletes and get those guys in good situations to excel, and hopefully we'll start to win some of those games that historically we were notorious for losing.
Yeah, I think you're right, and most of the experts will look at that game and see that there isn't much of a talent disparity. There might even be a little more talent with the Wildcats right now, even though what happened with the result. But just very bluntly, is this the most devastating loss you can remember for this program? A lot of people point to the Bluegrass Miracle against LSU. That was back in 2002, I believe, before you were in Lexington. But that was just a serious, serious punch to the gut. Just you look around the fans at Kroger Field after the game and just pure disbelief. Has it ever been worse for a singular loss for this program?
You know what? Not that I can recall. It's certainly devastating for the programs, devastating for the athletes. It's just something that certainly they'll have to overcome. I think right now they just need to regroup, focusing on the next opponent, and then hopefully they're able to bounce back and come away with the victory. So, from their standpoint, the biggest thing right now is just to, continue to rally a little bit and understand that, next week it's time to bounce back and face another opponent in the SEC, and hopefully we're able to come away with another win.
Now, tell me how that works in the locker room. It's sort of a double-edged sword where even if you win that game, with everything it was built up to be, the danger the following week, no matter the opponent, is the letdown. And then you have what actually happened, which is a devastating loss. And the danger is that one loss can become two or three because you just can't recover from it. You know you're never going to quite forget about what happened this past Saturday, but how do you do your best to move on and just wipe the slate clean and get ready for film work and the next opponent that's coming up the next Saturday?
Yeah, it's a really difficult challenge. I think the biggest thing is, having a pitcher's mentality, realizing it's time to go on to the next game, next play, and hopefully, they have that mentality as well. The biggest thing, though, is leadership. We just need to continue to focus on that, harp on that, get these guys to understand that, obviously the outcome wasn't what we expected and what we wanted. But at the end of the day, we have another opponent that we have to face, and we'll have to obviously prepare for them and execute well. And hopefully they come out successful and very efficient But the biggest thing, obviously, is just letting that game go, realizing there's areas to improve upon, and hopefully they have the ability to watch that film, break it down, and realize where they, you know, miscues or where they missed out on opportunities to, you know, do better in the future. And then, you know, hopefully from that standpoint, we'll have the ability to, you know, when we face Georgia and Tennessee and et cetera, potentially come out victorious.
Yeah, I know that you're going to watch the film of that game. And, of course, the one snap that nobody's going to be able to ignore was the deciding touchdown pass from Luke Del Rio to Freddie Swain. And I just have to ask the question. I know you were a quarterback and you weren't a defensive guy, but how does that happen? How does the field corner not simply look to his left and realize that there's a guy wide open we're not even covering? I know you have specific calls. Maybe there was a blitz package. Maybe there was some, maybe a zone dog coming on. But again, you have to just use some basic common sense and say, why is there nobody over here? How does that happen in the heat of the moment?
Yeah, I'm a little baffled about that as well. But you know what? That's the nature of the game. I mean, you know, you have great coaches on both sides of the field. And obviously, they're game planning, they're executing, and when they go out on the field, they're identifying that perhaps they're overlooking, you know, certain formations and certain concepts. And then from that standpoint, they have the ability to go back to it because they realize in certain different looks, individuals are being uncovered. I certainly believe that's probably the case. And schematically, you know, we just have to make sure that we're playing, you know, putting our players in the right positions to, you know, exceed. And, you know, I think from, you know, at that situation, I think Florida had identified multiple times that a certain individual was being uncovered, and they certainly went to that look. And that was definitely the case where we were just, you know, we were incognizant that, you know, this person was kind of uncovered and kind of got lost in those plays. So, you know, hopefully, you know, for Kentucky, you know, we're able to sort of make the appropriate adjustments in the future, make sure that guys are sort of analyzing the entire field and that there's no space that's uncovered in the future. But certainly, once again, I mean, there's areas to improve upon, and hopefully we have the ability to bounce back and realize that, you know, we made some errors in this game, but that's certainly something we can improve on, and hopefully, you know, we'll definitely have the mind frame to you know, execute better in the future.
Now, let me ask the question from the other direction, which is probably better talking to you as a former quarterback. When you're at the line of scrimmage and you see a situation like that, we've seen that in the past where you got a guy who's uncovered. All you have to do is snap it and throw it to him. Sometimes you get so excited you fumble the snap or you throw it into the second row. Sometimes you just lob it up there and the guy is so wide open, he freaks out and he drops the pass. So what's the protocol as a quarterback? You don't want to snap the ball too quickly. You might have a false start. You have to make sure you throw the ball on target. And you can't also let the defense know, hey, you're making an egregious error here. I got a gimme. How exactly do you approach that as a quarterback when you see just a flashing light out there and you got a freebie here if you take advantage of it?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's great instincts. I think it's just the feel of the game. In addition to that, I also think it's just being aligned with that receiver. You know, I think as the chemistry builds, you both kind of just see the game or, you know, the feel the same. And so in those sort of scenarios, you know, ultimately, you know, just a little nod to the receiver, I think that gives a huge indicator that, hey, look, I'm coming to you, or, you know, I'm uncovered. You know, a lot of times you have receivers that are waving their arms in the air, you know, kind of giving it up. You know, they're putting a bullseye on themselves. You know, instead of doing that, you know, essentially if the quarterback locks eyes with you, ultimately he's identifying that, hey, I realize that you're uncovered. So, you know, in those situations, I think as, you know, the more players become more familiar and acclimated to, you know, that individual, I think they become on the same page. And ultimately, you know, you just have to, you know, you have to try not to do too much to, you know, disclose the fact that this person's open. Just get on the same page and make those plays.
Now, one thing that was undeniable, even in the wake of such a loss, is that there seems still to be a lot of support for Coach Stoops. And there wasn't a whole lot of people in that crowd or on Sports Talk Radio Monday morning saying, look, Stoops is not the guy. We can't win these games. We got to try again. We can't get over the hump. There still seems to be a lot of support for this guy. The talent level has been elevated. This team seems to be relevant in the East. There's still a long way from competing to get to Atlanta the first week in December, but I still feel like the support is there for Coach Stoops. As a former player, what kind of relationship do you have with him, and do you still see good things in the future compared to what we saw this past Saturday?
Yeah, certainly. I'll sort of echo what I've sort of stated in the past, but I think they've done a phenomenal job in regards to recruiting. They're pulling out players that historically we weren't able to sort of compete with, different conferences, and drawing some players out of Georgia and Florida and some of these other states south. So I think they've done a remarkable job going in there, selling the program, getting these kids to come in there and compete. Ohio's been another state they've done a very impressive job with. So in regards to actually pitching, you know, the program to these players and helping them understand that they can be, sort of help rebuild the program and really get it to, more of a prominent institution. I think they've done an excellent job in that regard. So the biggest thing, you know, I think they need to continue to do is just continue to develop the players, continue to make sure that they're entirely focused on the games, and, continue to put them in, great situations to do well on the football field in regards to X's and O's. So, you know, hopefully the concepts, you know, those games, they'll fall in place, you know, after a while. They're really doing a great job of just really getting the program out there, getting people excited about coming to witness them. And hopefully, you know, they'll continue to become bowl eligible. And, if we can start winning some of those bigger games, and highlight the success of that, I think nationally, you know, we'll start getting more recognition.
Yes, you talk about recruiting, which, of course, is the lifeblood of college football. Coach Stoops really has done a fantastic job. You also reference Ohio, which is where he's from. He's done very well in the Buckeye State. He's landed some kids who had offers from places like Ohio State. But if you're one of these on-the-fence types, let's say you're a four-star kid, you're the class of 2018, you need to make up your mind, be it December in the new early signing period or the first Wednesday in February for National Signing Day, and you're watching that game, is it more natural to think to yourself, hey, that's Kentucky being Kentucky. They're never going to win these games. Why do I want to go there? I'm fighting for 7-5 in the Music City Bowl. Or are there more kids out there thinking, you know what, if they get me and if they get my boy next year and we have a top 20 class, we're going to win these games. I want to be a part of the program when they turn these things around and start beating Florida.
Yeah, that's a great question. I really believe it's very dependent on the viewpoint of that athlete, of that recruit. You know, it's whether he wants to play instantly or have an opportunity to compete and, you know, get on the field instantly and really make an impact on that university, on that team, or if it's an individual that's, you know, willing to go compete at Alabama or another institution where potentially, I mean, you know, he may be looking to be a backup for multiple years until ultimately he has that ability or opportunity to get onto the field. So, in addition to that, I think also, you know, you have to consider the atmosphere, the environment of playing at University of Kentucky. I mean, the excitement just to, you know, be in these games, be competitive, have an opportunity to come away with wins. You know, people are very excited at that university, and I think the fan base is very strong. The fact that, you know, it's such a solid, showing of support and, continuously, rallying behind the players, I think that ultimately has persuasion on what direction some of these athletes want to go. So I think both of those factors, those variables are really, really strong, with helping recruit some of these players, drawing them out of states of Ohio and Georgia and Florida. And hopefully they'll continue to use those resources as selling the platform for Kentucky.
Of course, I have to ask you your take on Steven Johnson. I admit it, a year ago, I was pretty high on Drew Barker. I thought he had a chance to be a really good quarterback. Four-star kid, former player of the year in the Bluegrass State, but he had the injury. Steven Johnson is good last year, not great, but he ran the offense very efficiently, didn't make a lot of mistakes. And right now, I see a guy who's a legitimate starter in the SEC. I don't know how high his ceiling is, but I think he's certainly elevated his floor. You play this position as well as anybody at that program. Parenthetically, I'm a Florida State guy. I still haven't quite forgiven you from beating my Noles in a bowl game. We'll let that slide. But just give me your general assessment of what you see from Mr. Johnson so far.
Yeah, I think he has all the tangibles to be, really solid quarterback in the conference. He's had a strong, first quarter of the season, showing. The biggest thing for me is just, continue to be consistent with the intermediate routes. I think, you know, his vertical package, I think he's done extremely well with those. He's been very accurate. But, you know, just continue to make good decisions, you know, based on, you know, coverages, looks, schemes. Continue to go through the progressions. The biggest thing for me, though, is, you know, taking care of the football. I think he's done a pretty great job in that regards, and hopefully that's something that they'll continue to lean heavily on as they move forward. I know that they really try to run the ball, you know, obviously a lot, and rightfully so. I mean, they have a lot of athletes. But, you know, continue to, you know, put more pressure on him. You know, let's see what he can continue to do. I mean, he's done an incredible job thus far, you know, just sort of moving the ball, especially against Florida in particular. You know, I thought, you know, he was excellent with some of the vertical packages. So I'll be excited to see what they do, obviously, in the next couple weeks. But most importantly, I like to see how he's going to close out the season.
Yeah, one last question, sort of nuts and boltsy. I don't think you had this when you played for the Wildcats, but the Wildcat package of this offense, it's with Benny Snell, and it's also with Lynn Bowden Jr., who's another one of those Ohio kids we talked about. What's it like as a quarterback when you have to break the huddle and you're not the one taking the snap, and you're lining up as a split end, and you're there basically just to occupy space? I imagine as a quarterback, when having rhythm and feel from play to play is so important, that can disrupt that to some degree. And maybe some guys take that as, why aren't I taking the snap every single time? I'm curious how he deals with that, where, hey, it's part of the offense and I'm doing my part, or maybe he feels like he's being slighted and not getting the chance to make all the plays necessary.
Yeah, I think removing the quarterback out of the equation is critical. I think if teams realize that they have an essential piece to the offensive unit, which is the quarterback, and he's very efficient with decision making and, you know, just continuously executing within the game plan and moving the ball, I think ultimately you never remove that component from the actual schemes. And then, you know, seeing Steven Johnson being removed from that element, from that equation, for me, that would be very frustrating. I don't think I would have the ability to accept that. And so, obviously, the Wildcat wasn't very popular when I played, thank goodness. But, you know, I think it's unfortunate, especially when you have a player who's, you know, playing so at such a high level, at least in this past week. I think, you know, you want to be very cognizant of, you know, considering not moving this player, you know, from you know, sort of that dynamic, and keeping him, allowing him to touch the ball every single play, you know, especially when they're doing such an excellent job with helping, you know, making decisions at the line of scrimmage, with getting the plays, you know, getting the team in the best positions to, you know, move the ball. You know, I hate seeing players, I hate seeing quarterbacks being removed from that situation. So if you have a very, very dynamic, explosive player, obviously they're just trying to get the ball into, and certainly you're going to, you know, utilize Wildcat as much as possible, especially if, you know, you have that unique individual who's going to take the snap. But, you know, for me, being a quarterback, you know, I hate seeing that sort of play, especially as popular as it's become, because ultimately you're removing that quarterback from that scenario.
Spoken like a guy who threw 40 touchdown passes as a senior. Very honest, of course. You're listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Our guest is former Kentucky quarterback Andre Woodson. If you're listening to the podcast, then you know the South loves football. You know what the South loves even more? Crystal. That's right. Crystal, home of the classic Crystal Burger, ready to hook you up for your tailgate. The Crystal, the one you grew up with, right now, 79 cents. All day, every day, as many as you want, just 79 cents. And because no tailgate is complete without chicken wings, Crystal is going to take care of you there as well. All wings, any wings, 49 cents each, Saturdays and Sundays this fall. Boneless, traditional, buffalo, barbecue, any wing, any flavor, just 49 cents each all weekend long. Best of all, Crystal is going to hook up the Saturday Down South podcast listeners. Text SDS, the letters SDS, to 37793 right now, and you're going to get two free crystals. That's SDS to 37793 via text message. 79 cent crystals, 49 cent wings. I guarantee if you show up at your tailgate with a steamer pack of crystals, you're going to be the people's champion. Stop by your local Crystal today. All right, Andre, let's move on to another topic. I had your kicker on the show last week, Austin McGinnis, tremendous young man. It's a shame he didn't get a chance at a legit game winner this past Saturday. That holding call is going to just live in infamy. But I want to know what it's like being a football player at a basketball school. No matter what Kentucky has done on the football field, we're talking about Rupp Arena and we're talking about the Wildcats and one of the best basketball programs the sport has ever seen. It's always going to be hoops first in Lexington. What that was like for you in your 4 years on campus?
Yeah, it was really difficult. You know, you consider that obviously University of Kentucky basketball program is a very prestigious program with a lot of rich history. So obviously we're certainly always in the shadows. And so it was challenging at times because, we really struggled, especially in the first two or three seasons, I guess I was at the University of Kentucky, and sort of having to, overcome those obstacles and getting more people sort of excited about the football program, anticipating the football program and actually showing up to games. You know, the attendance population was always extremely low, especially from a student, body standpoint. So, it was always a factor, obviously, trying to sell the program to a lot of athletes. But, that's one of the things, I guess we had an opportunity to be a part of this, sort of rebranding the program, getting people excited about it, coming out to attending the games and actually witnessing us come away with some pretty monumental wins for the institution. So it was an exciting time, but at the same point, it was a really challenging time for, I say, our senior class as we tried to overcome a lot of obstacles.
Now, what kind of relationship did you have with the basketball team? Again, I'll bring this back to my experience at Florida State in the 90s. Steve Robinson was the basketball coach, and he did things that didn't make a lot of sense to me. He didn't want his basketball team even associating with the football team. Now, you're at Florida State. It's a football power and all these advantages that you get. He didn't want the basketball team taking advantage of that, which seemed a little strange to me. So I'm curious with the reciprocal situation, what that's like for Kentucky, what it was like with the basketball program. Were you friendly with them? Did you spend time with them? Are you in the weight room together? Are you trying to leverage the success of the basketball team to help you on the football field?
Yeah, no, there was actually minimal interaction between the football program and the basketball program. I think now, obviously, over the course of time, that certainly has changed. From my understanding, the football program and the basketball program, I mean, they do an excellent job sort of communicating, team building around each other. I think, Calipari and Stoops have been pretty spot on with understanding, sort of the benefits of making sure that both programs have the ability to sort of engage and recruit, selling that platform for both programs. So now I understand that they're doing, a remarkable job, obviously, communicating with each other and really doing a lot of events together. But at that time, no, that was something, obviously, there wasn't a lot of focus on, and I think that we certainly missed out on some opportunities.
Now, you were a sixth-round pick of the New York Giants and never had a chance to throw an NFL pass in a game that counted. I'm sure you had plenty of action in preseason games. What we like to say, a cup of coffee in the pros is what you had. I'm curious about your NFL experience. I'm sure it was a thrill being drafted and putting on that NFL logo, but you probably didn't stick around as long as you had wanted, didn't get a chance to compete as the highest level as you had wanted. Just how do you look back at your NFL career now that you're as far removed from it as you are?
Well, you know what? I thought it was a tremendous experience. Certainly a lot of people don't have the opportunity to, partake in, playing at that sort of level and with such, talented professional athletes. Certainly it's unfortunate that, everything worked out the way it did. But at the end of the day, I still get to, think about it, that I was drafted in the NFL, the National Professional League, and, just the opportunity to play with the New York Giants and build relationships with Eli Manning and other players certainly is invaluable and something I'll continue to remember for the rest of my life. But certainly I thought I had a lot of ability. I thought there was a lot left in the tank. But there's a lot of focus on my throwing mechanics and sort of the unorthodox sort of release that I had. And, I don't have a lot of regrets, but if I could go back, obviously I would have more focus on my throwing motion and try to make the appropriate adjustments. So that wasn't such attention based on that. But at the end of the day, though, I mean, it was a great opportunity to experience that, and I certainly enjoyed every moment of it.
Now, Andre, I'm going to transition into my final topic for you somewhat gingerly, but the biggest story in the NFL right now is what's going on with the national anthem and with President Trump, and that the stance that the players and even the owners are taking against the leader of our country. And when I did some research on you, I thought you were the person to ask this question. I don't do a lot of political stuff in my work. I just don't feel that that's for me. But you grew up an Army brat, a self-described Army brat. I believe your mother was in the Army, and you moved around to several places before finally landing in Kentucky and going to school there, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm curious your take on the national anthem, being a part of a military family, but also being an NFL player. And just, I think your perspective is different from what a lot of other people's would be. I would love to hear your take and what's going on.
Yeah, I really do have a dynamic sort of perspective on that. My mother served 20 years in the Army before retiring, and then my father was also a Purple Heart. So I certainly understand from civilians and other people, obviously, whose family members were in the military and served our country and perhaps even, you know, died protecting our country, and why this obviously affects them so heavily. And from that standpoint, certainly, you know, I completely understand why there's so much focus on this and why so many people have such a difficult time understanding why people would be willing to take a knee or sit during the national anthem. I don't think sitting during the national anthem is the right sort of is the right stance. And certainly is not the platform for, you know, trying to convey a specific message, a concise message. But at the same point, obviously, there's a lot of focus on police brutality, and there's a lot of focus on inequality. And, you know, I think, you know, athletes right now are just trying to use their platform to get a message across. So it's, you know, it's a really difficult situation on both parties. But I think at the end of the day, I think we all just need to unite and realize that they're not trying to be disrespectful. But at the same point, I think, you know, we just need to find common ground, and we really need to hopefully respect one another and come to a situation where we can just, you know, really, really try to just unite as a country and hopefully we're able to overcome this really sort of devastating and very challenging situation that we're all in at this point.
Yeah, it seems like there's only polarizing ways to look at this topic, and I do believe there is some middle ground, but those don't generate headlines. If you'll indulge me just for a minute, my only issue with the players who kneel are the ones who kneel and do nothing else. If you're going to protest and you have the constitutional right to protest, then couple that protest with some action. Don't just kneel.
Yeah.
Kneel and then, you know, visit your local police station and talk to some officers about how they can have better relationships with the people they're sworn to serve and protect. Don't just kneel. Yeah. Kneel while holding the hand of a military man or woman, like your parents, so they understand that you still appreciate what they do for you on foreign soil every day so that you can do what you do and earn a paycheck playing a kid's game. Protest for protest's sake is a hollow message to me. And I think that's why so many football fans just don't care. They just want to watch the game. But protests combined with action, that's an opportunity for change. And the irony is that Colin Kaepernick, the guy who started all this, he's written more checks left and right than anybody. He's actually trying to make the world a better place, but he's been blackballed nonetheless. So, Andre, your opinion means more to me on this than a lot of former players because of your background. So I guess I'll just get off my soapbox here and let you wrap up the show for me, please.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think athletes need to be more proactive and more impactful in their communities, especially, you know, considering where they're from, and really give back and certainly, you know, try to work in tandem, you know, with a lot of the law enforcement that are in that area. I think there needs to be more communication on both ends to better understand, like, you know, where we can potentially make improvements. But certainly, you know, I think there's, you know, I think there's too much focus at this point. I think this has become too divisive. I think, you know, because of media, I think with, you know, being so heavily focused on this topic, I think it's dividing both parties more and more. And people right now are, you know, they're really sticking to a certain side or a belief. And unfortunately, it's making it very difficult, you know, for anybody to overcome this sort of situation. But certainly there needs to be more dialogue from both ends. And I would love to see, obviously, community partners coming together and better understanding where we can make an improvement. So then that way, obviously, we can move on. And once again, we can unite. That's the biggest thing from my end is I just hope that, you know, we have the ability to overcome this.
Andre, that was very enlightening. I learned a lot. Thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That was former Kentucky quarterback Andre Woodson. Remember to follow him on Twitter at Andre Woodson Jr. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsors, Ticket City and Crystal. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever your favorite podcast can be found. Be sure to give the show a rating as well. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.